That's Houston Person on tenor sax, getting things started on Blues Everywhere. It's from his 2011 album, So Nice. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and it's like there's something in the water. Something is in the water or is in the air, but it's getting us all discombobulated, and the news all around is just so weird. Well, it's the toned-down buzzword for what used to be called affirmative action, but diversity has made a comeback. What is it exactly, and why has it emerged as such a major issue now? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. The Justice Department said just last week that it's going to rev up its overview, it's going to rev up its, I should say, it's taking a closer look at this thing that we started to know as affirmative action many years ago. But this as it relates to colleges and universities. And the reason, says the Justice Department, is it appears that it is these measures that were instituted to correct injustices committed in terms of admissions to colleges and universities may be flawed, so they have to be looked at to find out whether they are, in fact, not just remedies. They're now gone way beyond remedies. They are, in fact, against the law. Well, the latest issue involves Harvard University, and the complainant, or the complainants, plural, are Asian American. And they are being represented by a conservative group that looks out for people who have grievances that fall into their ideological sphere. This group had brought an action against the University of Texas before. We had talked about that. A young woman, white, had claimed that she was discriminated against and that she was denied access. She was denied entry and admission to the University of Texas. And she felt it was because she was white. In this case, at Harvard University, the claim is that the Asian plaintiffs believed that they were denied access, they were denied entry to Harvard University by virtue of their racial backgrounds. And so this case is going to be something of a test case, which you can see right off the bat, the intention is to test the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in the University of Texas case. And so we will be paying attention as this case proceeds. It's at the very beginning stage. How they prove that the ethnicity of the applicants was the deciding factor in their not being admitted to the university. And so it goes. Make no mistake, we're really fully aware that this administration, and especially the U.S. Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, are in one accord with this. The idea that they can automatically assume that particularly African Americans and Latinos have been given, in many instances, preferential treatment as regards their qualifications for entering a university of some sort or the other. And usually these are not Joe and Bob and Mary's university. This is like Harvard and Yale and universities of that type. But I want to look at this again, this whole idea that you have accusations being made, usually by whites, that blacks and Latinos and now Asians, and they'll go down the line until they run out of ethnic groups to point a finger at, that they're the reason that they have been denied access to a prestigious university. And this, therefore, has the consequential effect of damaging their prospects for employment after they graduate, or in any event, damaging their futures. It's a closeted way, I think, of saying that they resent the idea that they've been locked out, and they are testing it. But as we discussed with the University of Texas case, Abigail Fisher was her name, if you recall, she did not qualify to begin with. She did not meet the academic requirements for admission to the University of Texas. But she succeeded in getting the case to go that far. And she succeeded in persuading the public and the courts that it was because she was white that she was denied admission to the University of Texas. It was, you know, the phrase reverse racism. But it is a reflection of what is going on in America. It's not talked about out loud. It's not talked about often out loud. And that is a seething rage in white America, in large swatches of white America, major resentment and anger. And you can see that in some places. You can see it with the Donald Trump political base, Hillary Clinton's political base. You see that resentment because it is the feeling, especially I think it reached a high point with the election of Barack Obama. A lot of people were very, very, very happy, thrilled. But it was for that sector of white America a signal that they have lost ground, that they have become less than. And they resent it, deeply resent it. Just this past weekend, there was a big story about Google. And somebody, an employee of Google, wrote a long piece, apparently, and circulated it within the company, throughout the company, but alluding to perhaps false pretenses by which people of color generally are advancing in the world and competing with them. It is not fair. So they are accustomed to having preference. They're accustomed to enjoying preference. And when this, in their eyes, is taken away, or when it is threatened, then they have to question on what basis. On what legitimate basis did people of color and other specifically identified groups, now that would include transgender people, gay people, people with physical challenges and so forth, all the all the categories you could possibly imagine would be covered by the Civil Rights Act. How is it that these people, all of these people, have come to a point of power where they enjoy rights and privileges that they are not entitled to? That is essentially what we're arguing here. Now, they're covering it up in a way to make it look like this is a legitimate story about the legitimate issue of whether, in the university's case, we have the possibility of one group enjoying preference over another. And they will even elevate the argument to say, we're testing the constitutionality of this. Is this right? Did it happen? Who's responsible? And they will confine it to the immediate case of the university. What did Harvard University do that so harmed an individual? And it will be proven in a court of law. So that's where they're taking the case, but that's not really where it belongs. And what I'm saying is that that is being replicated in a number of ways across the country. The issue is not about the constitutionality of an act. That's easy to determine. The Civil Rights Act basically attempted several times, going back to Eisenhower, it was an honest attempt to try and even the playing field. In the case of Eisenhower, the act was to even the playing field for those who went to war and fought for this country and still, when they got home, could not take advantage of the benefits other soldiers could. You know, they couldn't get jobs. They couldn't get promotions. They still could not be accepted at certain colleges and universities. So that was an attempt to remedy that specific situation. Of course, over the years, different aspects were tacked on to it because there were many people who systematically had been denied their civil rights. Well, we call it civil rights, they're actually human rights, but okay, that's quibbling. But you had several presidents adding on or persuading Congress to add on other provisions because it was woefully inadequate. The initial act was inadequate. So as time went by and more of the injustices were seen, the act was amended in different ways to include the addressing of these problems. But along with that, it was interpreted one way in the court and another in the court of public opinion. In the court, it was simply a matter of the application of the law. Racism is against the law. These measures that were taken by institutions, institutional breaking of the law, was addressed. So that is a strict legal application of the law. I'm talking about how it translated, and nobody's really coming out and talking about how offended they were and still are by these laws protecting the civil rights of individuals, which will include equal protection and equal access to resources, employment being one of them, admission to a university being one of them. These are the resources. I don't know if you recall a commentary I did quite a while ago talking about what is democracy. And it has nothing to do with voting. It has to do with equal access or relatively equal access or even meaningful access to the strategic resources of a society, of our society. And employment would be one of those resources. Education would be another of those resources. Healthcare. Now that's what really proves democracy. When the people, all the people, have reasonably equal access to the resources of the society that they pay taxes for. And in the case of the military, that they went to war and served the country for. It is to be assumed that such resources should be available to all who qualify. Now, that might be a tricky thing. What does qualify mean? Well, in the cases that we're talking about today, the Harvard case and the University of Texas case, the qualifier is pretty straightforward. They're looking at your grade point average. They're looking at how you performed before you submitted your application. And are there any mitigating circumstances that would work in your favor if it is a close shave? Let's say they're expecting the average student coming into Harvard as having a grade point average while in high school, let's say about 3.5. I'm making it all up. You apply, but you have a 3.0. And you apply on the wing and a prayer that somehow, maybe it's your personal essay will get you over the top. You know, something would work in your favor. And they may be persuaded to look at your application again because they saw something there that should be looked at that would give you a nice little nudge across the line. Let's just say that. But universities are perfectly correct to have standards of admission. Everybody does. So Abigail Fisher did not have a suitable grade point average when she applied to the University of Texas. So on that basis, she did not qualify for admission to the university. And that was the reason that they gave her. Your grade point average is very low. You know, take another try, go back to hit the books, or, you know, do something in the meantime and study and apply again. But she said no. Because there are black people on this campus, and there are Latinos on this campus, and I know for a fact, now she isn't in the school yet, I know for a fact that a whole bunch of them came into the University of Texas without the proper grade point average. And she took the case to court. Well, it didn't work. The court ruled 4-3 that she was legally and lawfully not allowed to come into the university with less than desirable or less than required grade point average. This is the same kind of case that we had seen earlier. I think this was in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken, with Bakke, who wanted to apply to medical school. And the same thing happened. His grades were beneath what they wanted. And he made the case that the school made exceptions for blacks. They should have made exceptions for him. So here we are looking in an academic session, looking in an academic setting about something that distilled onto a small space of a university campus, but really is about the relationship in the wider sense in the United States. Whites, many whites, very, very, very angry when they don't measure up and are told so. And even if African-American and Latino students were given a nudge that worked in their favor, the fact is that the law also gave them a nudge that worked in their favor. Because for decades and decades, these two groups, more than any other groups that people could quantify, were on the receiving end of the negatives. And that was the whole point of the law. There must be a period during which we try to make up for this. I mean, people were openly discriminating. You had people being taunted on campus and physically assaulted. And you know the pictures that you have seen of that young girl clutching her school books. And it took Marines to get her to class. You know, so we have a situation in a society where particular groups, identifiable groups, have been selected for mistreatment, maltreatment, for denial of opportunity, and so forth. There is some attempt, it's not particularly so comprehensive, but there's some attempt to fix that. It is not by any means the solution. But there is some attempt to provide an interim period. Over this interim period, a way of gaining balance. Whites immediately saw this as favoritism. And it is against the law, they said, to pit one group against another, specifically so that one group has an advantage over the other. That's wrong and unconstitutional and all of that. The counter argument is, you had no trouble with the same law when you were winning and under specious circumstances. You were winning even though you weren't qualified. You were given preferential treatment, although you were totally unqualified for it, because you were white in a white America. And I'm speaking now as politically. You belonged to the ruling class. You required no qualifications at all. The world was your oyster. You could do whatever you wanted because this was your world. Everything was with you and your welfare in mind. You lived in the best neighborhoods. You had the best police services, the best schools. You had the best of everything. And still you weren't qualified, but you got through because that's the way the world was working. Well, it's a new world. And Miss Fisher, I'm so sorry. I wish you had been able to get into the University of Texas, but you didn't have the grades. It's that simple. Now, why must that be in your mind? Because you didn't have the grades. Why must that be an assault on your constitutional rights? And why must we all see it that way? Well, the situation now at Harvard is very interesting because here's what the white world has developed as a strategy. We'll use the Asians as a wedge between the whites and Latinos and blacks. We will now plead their cause, even though they are very clear, the Asians are very clear, and they're very politically savvy on this one, at least the positions that I've seen them take, is include us out. We are not in this fight. This is not our fight, and don't drag us into it. We can handle it. Don't drag us into it. And this is where the case stands at Harvard. They, in order to make the case for whites, those whites who have not been able to get into Harvard, and who point to the fact that Harvard, in fact, has the largest number of people of color admitted to the institution in recent years. Not under the, we'll give you, you know, we'll wink an eye and let you in, but on a very legitimate, highly competitive basis. So this has to be wrong by the conservative whites who have decided that a good tack to take would be to get Asians in there. In the fight, have the Asians fight the Latinos and the blacks who are doing okay, and kind of join them in this renewed race war on college campuses, especially the campuses of colleges and universities that people are dying to get into. And now they have a friend in the White House. You see, you have these lawyers who supposedly are public interest lawyers, but they look for cases where their respective parties or their respective areas of interest could make a point. And one of the points that this administration wants to make is to destroy affirmative action. And that is why Jeff Sessions says he's going to take a look at these policies because right off the bat, he's implying that they are unconstitutional. They're totally unconstitutional and they ought to be done away with. Immediately, it will certainly impact people who are looking for some kind of help, any help you can get you take it. Affirmative action is help. But it isn't the kind of gimme, gimme help. This was help instituted by the government itself when it realized it had no defense for supporting the kind of racism, the trenchant racism that we had seen in this country for decades. And that, in fact, is why today we have another thing that they're trying to destroy, which is historically black colleges and universities. That's where the black students went. Strict apartheid. They liked it that way. So here we are. Today I thought we'd talk about this idea. Is affirmative action, has it served its purpose, and should it just be cut loose now, having served its purpose? And with many people claiming that it is actually unconstitutional, despite the fact that five or six presidents have supported it, admitting fully what the government and this society had done, the damage done to people seeking a quality education and being denied it. And it didn't just have to do with grades. You can have really great grades, but you show up for the interview and they go, uh-oh, he's black, uh-oh, she's Latina. Surely we have other more deserving students. So this is bringing us back, I imagine, in the not too distant future, probably within a month, this would be the talk of the town. Jeff Sessions is loading up and he's getting ready to unload on colleges and universities that have propitiously and responsibly used affirmative action to correct historic wrongs. And it was a very, very important thing that they did, that they obeyed the law to utilize affirmative action to basically honor people's constitutional rights. They're constitutionally protected against negative actions being taken against them by virtue of their race. I'll take this little break here. We'll come back and find out what you're thinking about affirmative action and the clear intent of the Trump administration to wipe it out. Right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and the program is, what is your program? I'm losing my pages here. Give me 2 seconds. I have to adjust my computer. Okay. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. Something is going on with my computer where the pages from time to time, if you know what that is, let me know. It just keeps running. You know, it just keeps running. And it wouldn't stop. But anyway, it stopped now. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We're talking about the impending war on affirmative action by the Trump administration, being occasioned by a current situation at Harvard. And that is to get people in there. They feel that blacks are coming in, Latinos are coming in on rather suspicious, with rather suspicious qualifications. And in so doing, they have an up on white students who have struggled mightily to get their grade point averages up. And now people are just waltzing in because of affirmative action. And of course, that's not the way it is. But David from Brooklyn, how do you see it?
So many things were mentioned in your opening here, and I think are important. First of all, the ruling white, what we call white people, and what I specify as people with that European phenotype of the light skin, etc., they are not ruling class people. They have the same phenotype. They may look similar to the ruling class people here, but they're not ruling class. What I see about this whole discussion is that United States, the United States of America, has a caste system, And in this case, those people, what we call white, had certain privileges that were in effect since the early start of the country. And they see some of these privileges of their caste being removed or diminished in some respect. So that is the major reason that Trump was able to appeal to them, that anyone in that type of caste, you know, similar to the Indian type of caste, and they see these things going away, there's going to be some resistance. So that is one of the reasons that most of the white groups in the country during the last election voted for Trump. You know, it might have been a majority with the people of color and whatnot that went for Clinton, but it went for Trump because they see they are losing ground to people who are in a lower caste. Now, as far as affirmative action is concerned, the way I look at it, affirmative action has been what's been reserved for those people in that white cohort from the beginning. And that is what I look at. Preferential treatment in every respect, socially, economically, politically, in every way. Now, as far as the causes are concerned, a grade point average is not the only thing that colleges look at in selecting students. It may have, admission may have to do with special skills of a student. It may have to do with other factors, maybe the interest in what that student is interested in majoring in. So there are many, many factors that play into whether a student gets into a college or not. Now, as far as Asian students are concerned, I'm sure many of them are very diligent and whatnot, and they're very skilled in what they do in preparing for college. I understand some Asian students who are living in foreign countries are preparing to come to the United States, and they have their various modes of study and working towards that goal, and they're very successful at it. But anytime you have a society like this, which is not a democratic society, it's an oligarchy and run by oligarchs and plutocrats, the way you handle things is that you play people against each other. And that's, they're so good at that. Now they're going to play the Asians against the blacks and the Latinos and the whites. And, oh boy, you got a good thing going when you can play people against each other and you're at the top. So that's what they're doing now. And Sessions is helping them a lot now. He's in office so he can do things to manipulate and keep this pot boiling and make those white people at the bottom of the economic scale, not the, the oligarchs or plutocrats, mad, and then you control people better when you can do that. So that's how I see it. It's a very serious problem, and it all has to do with you're going to have these resources, and you're going to make it seem like these lower caste people are stealing resources. Now, as you know, because you've read about me, I sent a number of my children to those Ivy League schools that you're talking about. And I have no knowledge that they received any affirmative action. That they just came from me and they could kick some butt. So the point is that this is a massive game that's going on, and it's very sad because most people don't see how the game works. So they need to do things like read my book, Playing the Game, and find out how they're being used and manipulated to enrich the very top rung at the top of the mountain, the oligarchs and the plutocrats that are right behind them.
Thank you. Patricia, you're on the air from New York.
Good afternoon. Hello, Yatrice. Good afternoon.
And hello.
Glad you're well. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm in the street. I'm sorry. I'm happy to hear that you're very well, and good afternoon to the CRN family.
Thank you so much. And same to you.
I read an interesting article. Thank you. I read an interesting article last week in Politico about Jared Kushner and how he was admitted to Harvard. Jared Kushner graduated from a prestigious private school in New Jersey, but his academic record was not very stellar. As a matter of fact, it was very, very weak. And so when he applied to Harvard, the guidance counselors there thought he didn't have a prayer in hell of getting in. And so they were quite surprised when, in fact, he was admitted. They could not figure out how this occurred. Well, how this occurred was that at the time, Senator Frank Lautenberg, who was a friend of Jared Kushner's father, called upon Lautenberg to assist him in getting Jared admitted to Harvard. So Frank Lautenberg, who at the time was the senator from New Jersey, made a phone call to his colleague in the Congress, Ted Kennedy, who was at the time the senator from Massachusetts. Ted Kennedy then arranged a meeting between Jared Kushner's father and the administrators at Harvard. And as part of the deal, he donated $1 million in quarterly amounts, $250,000 a year, to Harvard in exchange for Jared's admission. And the reason he broke that up was because he wanted to make certain that Jared graduated. So the $1 million was divided over 4 years. And that's how Jared got into Harvard and how he got out. Even his Harvard transcript is not impressive. So when white folks start talking about, you know, not getting in, you know, they never talk about all of those children like Jared Kushner and like George W. Bush, who got into Yale because of his father's connection.
Or like Donald Trump.
Or like Donald Trump.
Why do you think he got into the military academy?
So I just thought I'd share that with you.
Thank you. That's just how it's done. The people with money don't have any reason to fear. There are no or very few impediments to their progress and what it is they want to do. It's all about money. You write a check and you buy your seat. That's how it's done. Thanks a lot for your call. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice and PRN people. Hope everyone
Hello.
Is well. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay, yeah. So first of all, I want to agree with David from Brooklyn, as I often do, because he's so knowledgeable. But I'm going to be a little more blunt. Donald Trump let people know what he was up to. And for he was different things to different people. And you see, he's the great white hope. Now, some people of color did vote for him for different reasons. But beyond that, you have to look at the people he appointed. Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III is carrying on the tradition of his family. He's doing what, in his mind, he's supposed to do. Now, remember, he's from the planter class in the South, and even poor whites weren't supposed to go to higher education. So, as David was stating, a lot of these people that we call Caucasian, they weren't even going to college at a certain time, not long ago, because there were no scholarships. There was no help from the community, except if maybe your church or something like that. But they're turning back the clock. This is what some people wanted. But the danger is that this is continuing to fracture our society. These people are just scared that America is becoming too brown. And it's not our fault that certain populations are not fecund enough. They're not producing enough babies. But, you know, that's not my problem. And what they fail to realize is that we all benefit when we have a higher educated society. Because, as we know in history, when economic times become harder, people point out the other as the problem. That's as old as Methuselah. You know, they look at the turn of the century with Wilson. Okay, lynching was at an all-time high. You know, lynching was at an all-time high. And we're creeping back to that era. We are really creeping back to that era because you've got law enforcement who's highly involved in some of these supremacist organizations. They're in the military. They're in many places. And some people just see it as a threat, whereas it could be an asset. So what we need to do now is educate people, because education is what will put this fire out. And that's one reason why certain folks don't want other people to be educated.
But let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. All right. So affirmative action has been around for quite a while now.
Right.
Do you think there would come a time when it would make sense to discontinue it? And under what conditions would such a thing occur?
Well, you know, it would be nice, but it's more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. Because let's remember, a lot of people don't know this unless you're in academia or you've gotten higher education, that the people who have benefited the most from affirmative action are white females. And a lot of folks don't know that, or they don't want to admit that. But that's absolutely who has benefited the most from affirmative action. Now, it would be nice, but as the caller from Brooklyn was saying, David, you know, when you get admitted to university or college, you have to write an essay on why you want to go to that particular school, what your interests are, have you been, what type of standing you had in high school. It's not just all about grades. Because you could sit behind a computer and check every box and answer every question right and get 99 out of 100 on a standardized test, but it doesn't mean you are socially inept. You could be socially inept. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but...
Yes, I'm getting it. I'm trying to figure out, when for the general population, let's say, that has been hearing about affirmative action and all the criticisms against it, how do we actually view affirmative action? Do we feel embarrassed about it? Do we like it? Do we think of it as being necessary? Do we think we could live without it one way or the other? No big deal. Do we understand what it is about and what it has been able to accomplish? I'm not so sure when I talk to people about affirmative action that they really do understand what it is.
They don't. Obviously, they don't. You ask 10 people on the street who has benefited the most since the early 70s from affirmative action, and maybe 3 out of 10 at the most will know that it's white female. I only know this because I spent 10 years working at a university. And I don't know. Some people just know and some people don't. But that's a very good point. I like the way you put that. See, once again, we have to educate folks. Because as soon as you say affirmative action, middle America thinks, oh, those black people who are unqualified or don't have the grades want to get into school. Remember what that Supreme Court justice said in one of his last decisions, Scalia. He said, well, you know, maybe those black students don't need to go to University of Texas because it's just too fast. It's too fast paced. Maybe they do need to go to a black school. And I'm not making this up. You know what I mean, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, I just keep going back to education. Education is a wonderful thing. It will make all of us richer.
But in the meantime, how would people or could people possibly get ready to take on this battle with the Sessions and Trump?
I would say it's a multi-pronged approach. And I would say one good way is to write your local papers and write in the opinion column. Submit some essays. Don't necessarily say what you look like or what your phenotype is, because people do read those things. People do read. Some people read. The president apparently doesn't read, but I guess he doesn't matter. But I would say that's one start. And, you know, we need to talk more because this problem didn't just happen. You see, we've gone two or three, maybe four generations, probably four, where we have a society where we have people who are going to school only with people who look like them because of redlining and white flight. You see, and that was not what was supposed to happen. You know, like I live in the South, okay, and they didn't get desegregated until very late, some schools in the 80s. They just opened up their own Christian academies at very low tuition rates, and they didn't admit, you know, other people. And maybe you want to let some other callers on because I could talk all day.
Well, actually, we've come to the end of the program. So this is a good point for me to sign off. But we are going to be talking a bit more about this, and keep your eye out for stories about this as they develop. This is going to be a huge issue, and it will make it a huge issue because Trump needs to revamp, hold on to his people. He's losing them. He's under severe attack. And so this is part of the plan to remain relevant with his base and to let them know that he's still holding on to the ideas and ideals that they expressed while, you know, running, and he's going to deliver. And so we have to be prepared that there should be some action on our part because it is a very important program and it ought to be held on to. I want to thank you, Khalil, for calling in today. Thank you all
thank
for
you.
Calling, David and Patricia as well. This brings us to the end of the program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories, LEID, stories, plural, at gmail.com. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.